devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sthaya Vaishnavati Vaikunanta Swami Vichinamani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Vavani Vichani Nivasesu Sinyani Paskachari Satani. Vande Hum Sri Guru Sri Vitapan Kamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamishcha. Sri Rupam Sri Jagujatam Sadhanam Vavanatam Vikam Stam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadhuritam Parijana Saitha Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahakana Vavita Sri Vishakam Vikamishcha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So it's May 27, 2009 in Honolulu, a reading from Canto 6, Chapter 16, King Chitriketu meets the Lord, Text 34. Now, I was really struggling with the meter of this verse because the number of syllables on the first and third line are not the same as the number of syllables on the second and fourth line.
It's a regular verse.
And I tried and tried and tried all different meters to say this verse, and I can't do it.
It's one of those regular.
So any of you want to give it a try?
You can just sort of say it.
Just sort of say it?
Like,
you do it. There you go. Okay, Suresh Prabhu, you show us.
Chitriketurvacha. We'll just do the whole line. Ajita jita samamati bi.
Ajita jita samamati bi.
Sarubir bhavanjita kabir bhavata.
Sarubir bhavanjita kabir bhavata.
Vijitaste picha bhajatam.
Vijitaste picha bhajatam.
Akamatmanam ya atmanoti karunah.
Akamatmanam ya atmanoti karunah.
One more time. Chitraketurvacha.
Chitraketurvacha.
Ajita jita samamati.
Ajita jita samamati.
Sadhu bhir bhavan jitatma bhir bhavata.
Sadhu bhir bhavan jitatma bhir bhavata.
Vijitaste picha bhajata.
Vijitaste picha bhajata.
Akamatmanam ya atmadoti karunah.
Akamatmanam ya atmanoti karunah. Thank you. Chitraketu vacha.
Chitraketu vacha.
King Chitraketu said.
King Chitraketu said,
Ajita,
Ajita,
O my unconquerable Lord,
O my unconquerable Lord,
Jita,
Jita,
conquered,
conquered,
Samamatibhi,
Samamatibhi,
by persons who have conquered the mind,
by persons who have conquered the mind,
Sadhubhi,
Sadhubhi,
the devotees,
the devotees,
Bhavan,
Bhavan,
your lordship,
your lordship,
Jita Atmabhi,
Jita Atmabhi,
who have completely controlled the senses, Bhavata,
Bhavata,
by you,
Vijitaha,
conquered,
Te,
they, Api, also, Cha, and, Bhajatam, to those who always engage in your service,
Akama Atmanam,
with no motives for material profit, Yaha,
who,
Atmadaha, giving yourself, Ati Karunaha,
extremely merciful.
So there's a really amazing, it's a long purport, there's a really amazing line in this purport, which distinguishes our philosophy from pretty much any philosophy of, or religious system in the world. It's actually incredible. You know, ajita jitaha. You cannot be conquered, but yet you are conquered. It reminds me of the idea, can God make a stone so heavy he can't lift it? I said, yes, he can, and then he can go ahead and lift it. So Krishna can't be conquered, and yet he can be conquered. And this is all about conquering, and we think this is all about conquering God. And generally, we don't talk about conquering God. Generally, we talk about doing what with God? Surrendering. Interesting that it's battle metaphors. But generally, right? Mame kam sharanam vraja. Sharanam, to surrender. We're always talking about surrender. And here we're talking about conquering Krishna. Right. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Chitraketu said, "O unconquerable Lord, although you cannot be conquered by anyone, you are certainly conquered by devotees who have control of the mind and senses. They can keep you under their control." Keeping God under your control? Is that the goal of our Krishna consciousness movement? To keep God under our control? "Because you are causelessly merciful to devotees who desire no material profit from you. Indeed, you give yourself to them." What is the Sanskrit here for "give yourself to them"?
Atmada.
"And because of this, you also have full control over your devotees." So this verse is really explaining the science of rasa, of relationship, and the very unique relationship between the devotee and God, which, as I say, is not even conceived of, really, in other systems of religion. Purport. "The Lord and the devotees both conquer. The Lord is conquered by the devotees, and the devotees are conquered by the Lord. Because of being conquered by one another, they both derive transcendental bliss from their relationship." Someone was asking the other day, isn't it wrong that we desire prema? No. We're supposed to desire this transcendental bliss from our relationship with Krishna. "The highest perfection of this mutual conquering, is exhibited by Krishna and the gopis. The gopis conquered Krishna, and Krishna conquered the gopis. Thus, whenever Krishna played his flute, he conquered the minds of the gopis." Pretty thoroughly, right? Krishna plays his flute. I mean, nowadays there's some big musician, they get up on stage, they play the guitar, and people swoon over them. I was reading it several months ago that there's some movie, what's it called? Anyway, about some vampire, and all the women are like flocking to this actor. Yeah, that's right. They're all flocking to this actor. He's just an actor, of course. So somebody wrote the script very expertly to like create this super attractive male character. And the actor's not actually the character, but all these women are falling over him. They were saying mothers and daughters were both going and falling at his feet. So there's a little...
Yeah.
So this is a little perverted reflection of Krishna. Or, you know, in my day, it was the Beatles. They got up on stage, and thousands of women were just, again, falling at their feet, trying to get a thread from their cloth, you know. So when Krishna plays his flute, the gopis are totally conquered. They're making chapatis. Nobody leaves chapatis on the stove. But they left the chapatis on the stove. Well, nobody leaves the milk boiling. They left the milk. They left their babies crying. Nobody leaves a baby crying. They were feeding their husbands. Right? They just left. And of course, not only the gopis, but the rivers stood still, and the stones melted, and etc., etc. So whenever Krishna played his flute, he conquered the minds of the gopis. And without seeing the gopis, Krishna could not be happy. Interesting. Without seeing the gopis, Krishna could not be happy. So Prabhupada often says how in this world that a man gets energy from a woman. He says, therefore, the good parents, they get their sons married at a young age so that they'll have incentive to work. Actually, this is one way you can tell the real renunciate. A real renunciate doesn't need energy from the opposite sex in order to be enthused. You know, we see so many people, they want to become brahmacharis because they don't want the responsibility of taking care of a family, but then they just lie around all day. Right? Useless. Or we see many renunciates who secretly try to get energy from the opposite sex. We see many renounced women who get some emotionally dependent relationship with a man, and many so-called renounced men who are very enthused by all of their adoring female followers. Right? And they establish an emotional conjugal relationship. It's very rare that a person can have full energy without that enthusiasm of the opposite sex. And Prabhupada said, this comes from God. It comes from God, that God is enthused by Radharani. But not only Radharani, Prabhupada said, all the gopis. And guess what? We are all what? Prakriti. We're all Prakriti, whether we're gopis or cowboys or peacocks or flowers or whatever. We're all Prakriti, and therefore we enthuse Krishna. We're all Shakti. Isn't that interesting? Says Krishna can't be happy without seeing the gopis. That means he can't really be fully happy without seeing us either. He wants to see us. He's like, how can I be happy without my Shakti? Other transcendentalists, such as jnanis and yogis, cannot conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only pure devotees can conquer him. Pure devotees are described as samamati, which means that they never deviate from devotional service under any circumstances. So now we're finding out what kind of person can enthuse the Lord. What kind of person is it that without whom the Lord cannot be happy, who can thus conquer the Lord? So that they never deviate from devotional service under any circumstances. It is not that devotees worship the Supreme Lord only when happy. They worship him even when in distress. Now, some purports probably says the opposite. Said it's not that the devotees only worship Krishna in distress. They also worship Krishna when they're happy. Happiness and distress do not hamper the process of devotional service. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says that devotional service is ahoitukiya pratiyata, unmotivated and uninterrupted. When a devotee offers devotional service to the Lord without any motive, anyabhilashita sunyam, his service cannot be hampered by any material condition, a pratiyata. So when devotional service has no material motive, then it's uninterrupted. When it has a material motive, then it's also interrupted. Does that make sense? It's interrupted either when you get what you want, then you don't want to do it anymore, or you don't get what you want and you say, why bother? Does that make sense? If I'm working for some result, I'm working at a job for money, let's say. When I get the money, why do I have to work anymore? If all of a sudden I win the lottery, why go to my job? I've already gotten what I wanted. And if I go to work and don't get paid, like I told you, there was one time my husband worked a job where he just didn't get paid. So what do you think he did? He quit. So if I'm working for some fruitive result for myself, if I don't get it, I quit. And once I have it sufficiently, I also quit. So if I'm serving Krishna for some material reward, it's not interrupt. It won't be uninterrupted service. As soon as I get something that I want, then now I don't have to really try hard in Krishna consciousness anymore. I'll just kind of glide along, or I'll stop totally. Or if I don't get it, I'm going on and on. I met one devotee like that. He said, for 10 years, I waited on Sankirtan, I had a shaved head, I wear funny clothes, I was chanting out in the streets. Isn't that sincere? I chanted my 16 millions every day. Wasn't that sincere? And I still didn't get ecstatic Krishna consciousness. Why should I do it anymore? Okay? So when one's not motivated, one just wants to please Krishna, when one just wants the relationship, then one goes on without interruption because the relationship's always there. Thus, a devotee who offers service in all conditions of life can conquer the Supreme Personality of God. A special distinction between devotees and the other transcendentalists, namely the jnanis and yogis, is that jnanis and yogis artificially try to become one with the Supreme, whereas devotees never aspire for such an impossible accomplishment. Devotees know that their position is to be eternally servants of the Supreme Lord and never to be one with him. Therefore, they are called samamati or jitatma. They detest oneness with the Supreme. They have no lusty desires for oneness. Interesting, huh? And Prabhupada's, of course, referring to the, where it says here, akamatmanam, akama. They don't have any lust. So it says they have no lusty desires for oneness. Now, Prabhupada's going to give an interesting definition of lust here. Instead, their desire is to be free from all material hankering. Therefore, they are called nishkama, desireless. A living entity cannot exist without desires. But desires that can never be fulfilled are called kama, lusty desires. So what's Prabhupada defining here as lust?
Something.
An unfulfillable desire. An impossible desire. Something you can never get. Isn't that amazing? Something that is impossible to achieve. And if you think about this idea of the fruit of desire, you're aiming for a fruit. You think of it as the donkey with the carrot. Of course, the good master occasionally gives the donkey a carrot, otherwise he wouldn't keep going. And why? He gives us a few drops here and there in our desert, you know. Takes a little eyedropper and puts a few drops of water every once in a while. You think, oh, there is an ocean. There is an ocean. But basically, the donkey following the carrot never really gets the carrot. And in this world, do we ever get satisfaction? You have an illusion of satisfaction for a moment. There is an illusion of satisfaction. Oh, I got it. I got my house. I got my perfect house. And then you live in it and you go, wait a minute, this plumbing isn't working right and I don't like this neighbor and the toilet doesn't flush properly. Something about it, all of a sudden it's not fully satisfying anymore. You know, you got the wedding and, oh, my perfect spouse. And then you live with them for a few months. You know? And all of a sudden, it's not, you know, you spent $20,000 on the wedding and so forth and so on, and you got all the nice photographs, but it's not what you thought it would be. Right? And you do all the trouble, we were talking about this, you do all the trouble to get your education, and you get your degree, and you can put all the titles after your name, and nobody respects you anymore than they did before you got your education. You say, wait a minute! Right? So on the day you walk on the stage and you're in your cap and gown that you mended for $70 and you get your diploma, you think, yes, I've accomplished it. Right? And the next day you're just an ordinary person all over again, isn't it? So lusty desire is something that can never be satisfied. You never really achieve it. You may get it externally, but you don't get the satisfaction in your heart. So the devotees give up those things. They want a possible desire. And how interesting that the materialists would see that their desires are very possible and our desires are impossible. The materialists would say, yeah, you know, I can go to school 4 years, I do my courses, I get my degree, I can go get a job, I can make money, that's achievable. But what you're trying to do, to become perfect and self-realized and fall in love with God, that's impossible. And we say, no, just the opposite. Falling in love with God, that's our natural state. That's who we are. That's very achievable. It may take some time, and it may take some austerity, but it's achievable. And what you want to achieve, you will never achieve. And even if you so-called achieve it, it won't fully satisfy you, and you will lose it. Even if you say it's fully satisfying, I met one devotee who told me that her parents were totally in love with each other for their whole marriage. She said she'd never seen a marriage like that anywhere. She's an Indian lady. She said, even in India, very rare to see such love between husband and wife. And then, one day, her father was driving in his car, died in a car accident. And the mother was in so much love that she, after the funeral, she got in her bed, never got out of her bed, and a year later she died. So even you have something perfect, it's temporary. So how can it be satisfying? How can it be satisfying? You find the perfect jacket. You know, wears out after a while. Your perfect spouse, they die. So therefore it's not achievable. And then you start all over again, come out of the womb. You know, you can't even say goo goo gaga for 3 months. Can't even hold a toy in your hand. You've got to figure everything out all over again, to go to school all over again and establish relationships all over again and figure out the culture all over again and amass your possessions all over again, and then you lose it. At the airport, there was a couple next to me, elderly couple, and the woman was saying to her husband, I wish I could be 18 all over again, knowing what I know now. I thought, you'll get that chance, lady. Don't worry about it. So, you know, that it's never to be fulfilled. Whereas what we are looking for, it can be fulfilled, and it will last forever. Kamastastar hitaganaha. Because of lusty desires, non-devotees are deprived of their intelligence. Thus, they are unable to conquer the Supreme Lord, whereas devotees, being freed from such unreasonable desires, can conquer the Lord. Such devotees are also conquered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because they are pure, being free from all material desires, they fully surrender to the Supreme Lord, and therefore the Lord conquers them. Such devotees never aspire for liberation. They simply desire to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. Because they serve the Lord without desires for remuneration. Except they do remember they want the Baitan of? What Baitan do they want? Prem. They don't want material remuneration. Remuneration. They can conquer the mercy of the Lord. The Lord is by nature very merciful, and when he sees that his servant is working without desires for material profit, naturally he is conquered. Devotees are always engaged in service. Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayar Bacham Sivai Kunta Guna Nirvarnane, which is about, that verse is about?
Ambarishma.
All the activities of their senses are engaged in the service of the Lord. Because of such devotion, the Lord gives himself to his devotees as if they could use him for any purpose they might desire. Is that amazing? Another place Prabhupada says that the pure devotee holds the Lord in the palm of their hand. Now, who would want wealth or beauty or power or followers, which are all temporary, or good health? If you could have a situation where the Lord gives himself to his devotees as if they could use him for any purpose they might desire, That's what Krishna will give us. Atmada. Of course, devotees have no purpose other than to serve. So why does Krishna give himself like that? Because the devotees are not going to? Explain him. When a devotee fully surrenders and has no aspiration for material profit, the Lord certainly gives him all opportunities for service. This is the position of the Lord when conquered by his devotees. Chitraketra vacha, ajita jita samamatibi, sarubir bhavan jita nibir bhavata, vajitaste pi cha bhajatam, akam atmanam ya atmano ti karunaha. Chitraketu said, O unconquerable Lord, although you cannot be conquered by anyone, you are certainly conquered by devotees who have control of the mind and senses. They can keep you under their control because you are causelessly merciful to devotees who desire no material profit from you. Indeed, you give yourself to them. And because of this, you also have full control over your devotees. So what is surrender? If I give myself to Krishna as if he could use me for any purpose he might desire. And when I surrender to Krishna like that, he gives himself to me as if I could use him for any purpose I might desire. That's what we're aiming for. And we're so afraid to do this. I'm so afraid to go to Krishna and say, my dear Lord, you can use me for any purpose you might desire. You can do anything you want with me. Whatever you want to do with me. If you want to use me like Bhishma, offer to set a bad example. Say, Lord, you can use me for whatever you want. Krishna says, okay, fight on the wrong side. Be apparently compromised by eating the core of a grains. And fight on the wrong side. Be the most powerful fighter in the world. Fight on the wrong side and be conquered. And lie in a bed of arrows for a few months. I mean, could any of us, can we stand to have a splinter under our nail? Would we agree like that? Krishna, okay, you can use me for any purpose you might desire. He says, okay, have about how many arrows are going through you? 50, 60? Have 50, 60 arrows going through you and lie there for 2 months. And speak philosophy with that. Arrows in your body. Would you do that for me, please? Go, forget it. For any purpose you might desire. And we're afraid because we think Krishna's going to hurt us. He's going to exploit us. But what does Krishna do? When we surrender like that, guess what? He surrenders like that. Why should he surrender? I mean, I know why I should surrender like that. I'm dependent. I'm helpless. I can't even move my hand or talk without him giving me the ability. I can't think. I can't walk. I can't say. I can't do anything. Without Krishna, well, I'm already really surrendered. It's, for me, it's just a question of acknowledging that I'm surrendered. I'm already surrendered. The only thing I'm not surrendering is my free will, for which I become imprisoned. And I can't even really exercise my free will. So for me, it's just a question of acknowledging the reality that I'm surrendered. I know why I should surrender. Why should Krishna surrender to me? Who am I? This whole universe is just one among millions and millions. This whole universe. And within the this universe, this planet is what? It's nothing. To the people on the other planets, we're just a little spot of light in the sky. And you know, you look at the map of the world, you can hardly even see Hawaii. It practically doesn't exist. We just speak of to see Honolulu. I mean, I'm smaller than an ant. I have no power. But still, if I say to Krishna, you can use me for whatever purpose you desire, I trust you. He says, okay, you can use me for whatever purpose you might desire, I trust you. It's amazing. Of course, people try to take that in, but they try to use Krishna like that. Most religions, they go to Krishna, you know. Please give me this, please give me this, please give me this, please give me this. And he says, wait a minute. You know, I'm not here to be exploited. And this is the conquering of love. Even in the material world, we have some perversion of this, that the parent and the child conquer each other out of love. That the parent is willing to do anything for the child, even give their own life. And the good child's willing to do anything for the parent. We see this in some instances where the lover and beloved like you were talking about Romeo and Juliet. You know, that's they give their life for each other. So we see some idea of this in this world, how mutual surrender is mutual conquering, and that that is the essence of love. So that's what we're aiming for. And once we give up this fear of surrender, then we find that we will both derive transcendental bliss from their relationship. That Krishna will derive transcendental bliss from his relationship with me. And if I will derive transcendental bliss from my relationship with him. So we can try a little bit. Maybe there's some fear we're aware of that we're hesitant to surrender. We can surrender at least a millimeter every day until eventually we can do the whole thing. And think of something today that we haven't yet surrendered. That Krishna, okay, I'm gonna try it. I'm gonna test it out. Let's see what happens if I take this little thing I'm holding on to and surrender. And as we do that and do that, gradually we'll have the faith to say, okay, Krishna, whatever you want to do with me, that's okay. Thank you. Grace to Shri Prabhupada.